Making Things Right, A Good Omens Podvic, written by Entangled Now and read by Jupp. For the prompt, sequel. Crowley's only half concentrating on the television when his phone rings. On a good day, he'd let the thing go to voicemail, and on a bad day, he'd let it go to the infinite loop of torment. Also voicemail, only harder to get out of. But today, any distraction feels like an opportunity, so he picks up. Crowley, he says flatly.
Oh, Mr. Crowley, it's been a while. It's Sam Baker. I've got a client who's looking for something special, something very rare, and I was hoping you might have a minute to point me in the right direction.
Crowley stares at the ceiling. Does he have a minute? Sam has been mildly useful in the past when he's needed to pick up something without putting in too much effort. And really, today has been a grand decoration of boredom on top of a truly boring cake of a week. What are they looking for? He asks. He can hear the rustle of paper, then the sound of someone shifting in a chair.
They are looking for double batch 18th century oak and mahogany mix, dipped to a red-brown finish, supposedly designed by some guy called Marston, who made 5 and then locked himself in a monastery and went mad.
Crowley blinked. Beryl Marston, he says thinly, because though the man had technically made the bats, the wood had been soaked in so much demonic power that they couldn't realistically be called anything of human design anymore.
Yes, that's it. I have sale receipts for 3 of them. 2 are in the US and 1 is in Finland. There are rumors the Marquis de Sade owned a 4th. The 5th I haven't been able to track down.
The one owned by the Marquis de Sade was destroyed, Crowley said with a frown. He knows that much because he vividly remembers destroying it himself 6 months ago when he found it in Aziraphale's bedroom. It's the only reason he knows the history of the damn thing. House fire.
Oh, damn. Right. Okay, do you have anything about the 5th? The man looking for it is willing to pay a bloody fortune.
Crowley frowns. He feels like asking who the hell wants this thing, if they know how dangerous it is. It feeds off the sexual energy of a person. It craves, desperately and eagerly, to leave someone helpless, to contort itself into an assortment of shapes and use them until they are spent and beyond. The threat it poses to a human is truly diabolical. If he was a better demon, he'd probably encourage this. But he's not. He's really not. Look, Sam, I've heard these things are really bad news. There's some sort of fungus in the woods that can cause hallucinations, madness even. They think that's what happened to Marston in the end. Because, sure, fungus can last 200 years, why not?
Oh shit, really? Damn, I'm going to have to disclose that to the client. It looks like I'm heading out to Soho tomorrow. Thanks anyway, mate.
Crowley listens to the dial tone for a long time. 3 hours later, he takes himself to the bookshop, driving a little more sedately than he normally would. There's no rush, and he has a speech to practice. It's not a long one, but there is an awkward flavor of apology to it, a smidgen of embarrassment. All judgment hammered out of it over the course of 2 hours and a bottle of whiskey. There's also a peace offering, one that he hopes is going to be well received. Let it not be said that Crowley would ever fail to support his best friend, love of his life, for the last 6,000 years. This is Crowley's cock-up. He'd made an honest mistake. But if there's one rule he's lived by for centuries, it's that what Aziraphale wants, Aziraphale gets. The bookshop doors open, and he makes a show of pushing them shut and locking them behind him. Aziraphale, who'd been reading by the armchair, frowns at him, the book held open on his palm, slowly shutting. He draws his delicate little gold glasses off. Crowley, is something wrong? Crowley's nodding before he can help it. Aziraphale, I owe you an apology. Aziraphale blinks. The book is set down, none too gently. He looks like he's expecting the worst after that. Would you come upstairs with me, please? Aziraphale looks bewildered for a moment, but he follows Crowley into the back and up the small staircase to Aziraphale's bedroom, where a very plain bed sits, a flower-patterned coverlet thrown over it. It looks like it hasn't been used in about 6 months. What's this about? The angel's nervous smile is fixed on him. I made a mistake, Crowley says thickly. I destroyed something of yours without asking. Aziraphale's eyes widen, and he tries to speak, but Crowley hurries on. It wasn't my place. I should have realized you're far too clever to have had that thing in here purely by chance. You know what you want, Angel, and when have I ever done anything but encourage you? Crowley leans in behind him and snaps his fingers. The plain bed shifts with a cracking groan of wood, mahogany breaking and reforming, the headboard spilling into a writhing collection of snakes, the legs swelling outwards with vines and talons and heavy, succulent fruits. The bedspread turns gold and red and black, and the bed knobs glide upwards until their towering posts polish to a mirror shine. Only then does Crowley lean in and press his mouth to Aziraphale's ear. Now, tell me exactly what you want from this fiendish piece of furniture, and I will use every speck of my power to make sure that it gives it to you. Repeatedly, enthusiastically, and indefinitely. Aziraphale draws in a ragged breath, one hand sliding backwards and gripping Crowley's wrist hard enough to bruise. Oh! The end.